This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Welcome to Connections. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, and we've got a really full plate this week. And Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Very good. You know, Bill, I'm just taking a look at some of the people we'll be talking to today, including a couple of people up in Rockport, where the Navy Weekend will take place this weekend. Also going to talk with the new program coordinator of the PARI program for Essex County, and she's fresh out of college, great support staff up in Gloucester. We're going to talk with her. Heather Atwood checks in, Bill, with a couple of stories you won't even believe. She's got a story about how the Mayan culture, the Mayans, kept a secret from Christopher Columbus about corn. And so when he took corn, well, I'll let her tell the story. We've got an interview you did with Julia Green about some recycling in Lynn. I've been talking to some people, Bill, about Seth Moulton. He seems to be everywhere, and I don't recall recently... a representative from this area who's been so visible. Am I making that up, or what do you think?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's been noticeable. I think ever since he took off, the actions that he's in the district are actions to get not only reelected, but maybe he's looking beyond his House seat. Of course, there's always speculation about that. Maybe a Senate seat, something like that. You never know. Of course, there's also a representative named Kennedy in another district in Massachusetts, a U.S. rep that might also have his eyes on a Senate seat as well. But we'll see. Obviously, that's something that once you get to Washington, it's pretty easy to catch that bug to move over to the other side, to the Senate side. But you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, think about who he kind of took out, if you will, in the sense that he beat Tierney, John Tierney, who had some issues going on. And so he was not very visible in the district, to be quite honest with you, I think, in his last several years as congressman. Certainly not at the level that Seth Moulton is. And, so Seth Moulton is very visible, and he's around the North Shore. And, I know that he was going to be on the North Shore a lot, I think, during the August recess. And that could change. They could... be called back for a little extended work in August, from what I understand, but we don't know that.
Yeah, I'd go back way back when I was in high school to Representative Bill Bates, and of course I can think of Nick Mavroulis and others, and it just seems to me, and again, maybe I'm just more aware of it, I don't know, that Congressman Moulton is just around. He seems to be everywhere. He's all over the North Shore. Bill, the other thing was in sports, we've got a couple of real headliners, I think. A Swampscott kid doing well in golf, and there's a new basketball coach down the line in high school.
Yeah, Winthrop has a new basketball coach, David Sacco, I guess. He caught me on that one, but he's from Pope John. I think he's the school's all-time leading scorer, so he's taking over that program. And also Stephen Delisio's story, who we've been putting up posts on, Mass Amateur Golf Championship being held in Newton at Charles River is they had some weather delays yesterday. So I think they still have to complete yesterday's match play, rather. They had the individual play the first 2 days in which he won all of that. So he got the top seed. I don't even know how that whole tournament works, but it's an MGA event and they're off and running today. And hopefully we'll get all their golf in, and we'll keep folks posted on that. But we also do have some links where you can check into the leaderboard and different things like that for how Stephen Delisio of Salem Country Club and formerly of St. John's Prep, a 19-year-old, is doing in that tournament.
Absolutely, and we'll check in with Gary Larrabee, who will explain that all to me for sure. And, Bill, finally, would you mind mentioning our North Shore Today post? Because you've got, I think there's some great references there that I'm not sure everybody's aware of. And can you just mention those things that you have up there?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to our North Shore Today post, what we have up there are links to business, weather, sports, the latest links beyond just the North Shore. We also have a lot of photos that we're able to get off social media. And they're out on social media. Folks want them out, and we'll put them up on our North Shore Today post. So it's a great way to quickly click on and see some of the folks here on the North Shore that are out and doing things. We also put up a video of the day. It could be all kinds of different things, and hopefully we'll have some local videos of the day as well. But videos of the day. And I mentioned the links. Ways to contact us. So obviously, you can email us. There's a 24-hour voicemail message service that we'll try to start using in a different way or so. But we have different ways to contact us, so keep us posted on things and use our email address and stay in touch with us. And I wanted to just mention one other thing. Yesterday, I went out with the Lynn Recycling team. They have a thing. We put a post up there called and they have a program and a grant through the state on increasing recycling IQ in Lynn. And basically what it is Lynn, the system that Lynn has is you put out a big barrel and you put all your recycling in one barrel and you put all your trash in another barrel, and the recycling is every 2 weeks, the trash is every week. But what they found is that folks were putting the wrong stuff in the recycling bin. And I think that's pretty typical for everywhere. But I think in urban areas, I think it's more of a problem. And also getting people to recycle has been an issue. But I think we kind of document some of the things that this team has done to inform folks as to about the recycling issue. And one thing, for example, plastic bags, which I learned in talking to Julia Green, their recycling coordinator, when they go into the recycling, when they finally go to the final place, whatever that's called, to be recycled, the plant, plastic bags gum up the system. It's hard to figure that out, but, you can put glass in, plastic, paper, cardboard, whatever, that's all great, but plastic bags mess up the system. And so that's a big one. And also other trash within the recycling thing. And there's one other interesting thing that she told me about is that out in California, for example, they're starting to recycle food. So you imagine yourself, if you have food now, we used to have food. We have a compost pile in our yard. We don't do that much since we moved recently, a few years ago. But food, there are some areas are recycling food. So in other words, you'd have three bins. You'd have your trash, you'd have your recycling, and then you'd have food. And she talks about that. So it's an interview applicable to all kinds of, to everyone on the North Shore and beyond, just about recycling and where we're going with that. And food is one of those big things that really could have a lot of benefits if recycled properly and well. And she tells that story in this interview on that post.
All about
in the program today.
All about ecology with Bill Newell and Julia Green. That's cool. I agree, Bill. That's great stuff. I didn't realize that about the food. That's interesting. Okay, I had one more thought and I've lost it. So anything else for today or the weekend, Bill?
And I can't find that thought, Rick. I just cannot find that thought either.
Let me know if you see it. Oh, I know what it was. On the video of the day, have you ever seen the skit where Robin Williams does about the Scotsman who invented golf? Have you ever seen that?
It sounds familiar, but we can search that one down. I remember a skit that he did. Actually, it was on the old Mork and Mindy show. Remember Jonathan Winters? I saw him
sure.
on something the other day. And those two were two of the greatest improvisers of all time,
absolutely.
I think, those two. And there was something with them together that wasn't on the Mork and Mindy show. But I think, wasn't Jonathan Winters on Mork and Mindy at one point at
yes.
the end of that show?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was. He was the dad or something or other, or uncle or
something like that, yeah.
Or Mr. Farley. That's what he was.
Well, I'm not sure the language is appropriate in the golf thing, but I would like people to see it. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. All right, young man, we'll talk to you later then.
Sounds good.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you. That's Bill Newell. We've got more coming up on Connections here on MSO.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Back on Connections from the deck of the San Diego Yacht Club in Rockport. We're going to be talking now about Rockport Navy Weekend. And we are with Sharon Grandmason and Roger Lesh, who are the co-chairs of the Rockport Navy Committee. And we've talked to Roger, and I'll get to Roger in a second. But Sharon, nice to be here, and thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Appreciate it. Now, tell me a little bit, okay, before we started the interview, we talked about your last name, and I studied linguistics for a while, and I'm really interested in names. So where did the name Grand Mason, I know you've got the I in it, but Grand Mason, what's that mean?
It's French. It means big house.
Big house. But this is not like a jail. You're talking about
buildings? No, buildings.
Okay.
Either somebody who lived in a big house, built a big house, or worked in a big house.
Okay. I thought it would be English, but Grand Mason is French?
Yes.
Okay.
Grand Mason.
Ah, there you go. That's why the I get it. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, I talked with Roger last week a little bit about Navy Weekend, and tell me a little bit about what the committee is and what it's comprised of and what you do.
The committee is comprised of all volunteers, and we work to bring the Navy into Rockport so that the general public can interact with them in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of activities that are set up so that people can actually walk up to the sailors and midshipmen and start a conversation.
Okay. It sounds a little bit like when the Royal Canadian Mounted Police musical ride shows up at Topsfield Fair. They put on a demonstration, and you can go talk with them around the ring. Roger, what's the background of the Naval Committee, or the Navy Committee, rather? How long have you guys been doing this, and what's the genesis of it?
Well, we've been doing it since 2007. As I pointed out to you earlier, Rockport has a history with the U.S. Navy. Mm-hmm. And as far back as we know, I'm sure it was involved with the Revolutionary War. But also, Teddy Roosevelt's Great White Fleet would come in several summers during the early 1900s. And there'd be sporting events and social events for the sailors. We don't know what they called the committee at that time. But after that, there was some... There would be different Navy ships that would come in like in the 50s and 60s. We don't know about World War II, but in the 50s and 60s, there'd be one or two that would come in and they'd take tours out on the boats, on the ships. Mm-hmm. And we got thinking about that, and we said, why not try to reprise that again?
Yeah.
So we got a group together and eventually called the Rockport Navy Committee. And as it grew, the first year we had a couple of, in 2007 and 2008, we had two frigates. One each year, and then we sort of built, and then after that we couldn't get any frigates due to economy and things like that, so we got a connection to the Naval Academy, U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, and we started inviting their boats up, and this year we're going to have the most, six boats with approximately 60 midshipmen, including advisors.
Excellent. Well, you know, the picture we showed and that you showed me, circa 1904 or somewhere around there. Now, it shows Rockport Harbor where we are right now, and we're at the end of T Wharf. But those ships out there in the background, there are four of them. Tell me a little bit about those, because obviously I've not seen that kind before.
Well, they were all battleships and cruisers of that era. I mean, they were smaller than some of the ones that we've had now, like in World War II, but... all the present, like the U.S. Arizona obviously has its own history, but the battleships are named after state. And if you research this, you'll see the former battleships of each state. Many of them were out there.
Okay.
The Great White Fleet went all around the world to show, the power for, Teddy Roosevelt's idea and to spread, PR for the Navy and for the country.
So you're basically talking about whenever this whatever season was, I'm guessing it's probably spring or summertime, you're basically talking about the United States Navy Armada right there off the rocks.
Right.
Oh, that's
right.
Cool.
A good number. And as you can see, there's probably six or eight out there in that photo.
Fantastic. All right. So we go back to what's happening this weekend, and we go back to Sharon, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about what is going on and when this thing starts.
For the public, it starts on Saturday morning. We have a kickball game up at Evans Field. The sailors and the midshipmen, one of the things Roger didn't mention is that there's sailors coming down from the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. In 2009 and 2010, they were the ones who came down to participate in the Navy weekend. We didn't start with the midshipmen until 2010. So what we're going to do with the kickball game is we're going to split the kids and the sailors and midshipmen up on two different teams, so there's no rivalries. It's a great game. It's amusing. There's no telling who's having more fun, whether it's the kids, the midshipmen, or the sailors. Both Saturday and Sunday, there's going to be a demonstration by the USS Constitution. They're going to be doing pike drills, which is basically the big spears. Unfortunately, they're not able to bring their cannon this year because of everything that's going on with the Constitution. The Constitution's going back in the water on July 23rd. Also, one of the sailboats from the Naval Academy will be open for tours at the end of T Wharf.
Okay.
And people can go down, tour the sailboat, speak with the midshipmen, ask questions. Committee members will be on hand if anyone has any questions for us.
Okay.
Sunday morning, there's a benefit breakfast at Brackett's. What we do there is...
Wait a minute. Is there a restaurant in town big enough to have a benefit breakfast? Because I remember it was at Flav's. Flav's was a little a closet you could walk into and have an egg.
Well, Brackett's doesn't normally serve breakfast.
Okay.
They are opening for us, and they are the sponsors. They are putting this on for us.
Where's that?
It's on Main Street.
Right, this isn't a public breakfast. This is for the
No,
sailors.
This is public. I'm not speaking anything that's just for the sailors.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And what we do is we have members of the public sit with either sailors or midshipmen.
Yeah.
So once again, it gives the sailors, gives the public an opportunity to actually interact with the Navy instead
Very
of
nice.
Watching them just go by in a parade.
Very nice. Roger, when you talk about midshipmen, you're talking about sometimes kids from ages 18 to 20, 21, 22, 23. How are they received in Rockport?
The ages go up to about 26. They're very well received. I mean, this isn't a Navy town or a military town. When they come ashore, they're all dressed in blue polos and khaki shorts. And the people love it. I mean, ever since we've had the Navy into Rockport, the residents and the businesses have been fantastic. The hospitality's been fantastic. We've had host families every year that put up the midshipmen and also sailors.
Mm-hmm.
And the sailors, they're active duty sailors. They're on the job all the time. And the midshipmen they're learning to be in the Navy and going 4 years to Annapolis and coming out as either a Marine officer, a Navy officer, or a Marine officer, or so.
You know, Rockport, like all of Cape Ann, really right here on the waterfront. You're so closely tied to fishing and to sporting, luxury craft and leisure craft and so on. But the ties to the Navy, I know in both Gloucester and Rockport, a lot of Navy veterans. And what's your background, Roger? I know as a police officer, you had to deal with the waterfront from time to time, didn't you?
Well, actually, my wife, Rosemary, who's a co-harbor master in Rockport with Scott Story, that's her area.
Okay.
I mean, the police do deal with situations around the waterfront and everything, but the harbor masters are the primary enforcement unit for organization for Rockport.
You know, I can imagine some of the discussions you guys must have had after duty, because each of you is in a relatively hazardous job.
Absolutely, and they go out in all kinds of weather to help people. They just had a serious incident last week, which I won't go into, but it's a busy place when it gets busy.
Absolutely. All right. So we go back to Sharon. And Sharon, anything else you want to mention about this Rockport Navy weekend? I asked Roger, he's giving you the signal here, but I asked him about parking. We'll get back to that in a minute. So what do you want to say?
Well, one of the events I didn't mention is the softball game up at Evans Field on Saturday night, and people are welcome to come and join, cheer on which either team they choose. A lot of Rockporters do cheer for the Navy rather than Rockport.
Oh boy.
And I just wanted to mention one thing about the sailors that come down from Portsmouth. these men and women are coming down on their own time. They're giving up their personal time to come down and participate in the Navy weekend. And I think sometimes the midshipmen overshadow them. And, you know, these people have been to war, you know?
Well, yeah, you bring up a good point. You don't have to wave the flag, and you don't have to be a red state or blue state to appreciate what American citizens do and how they serve. So you're right. I get it when the home folk are cheering on the visitors. I understand that. And you know what? The word patriotism comes to mind when I think of that.
I agree.
What's your background? How'd you get involved in Rockport Navy Weekend?
I made the mistake of speaking with Roger.
Okay. Yeah, that's. I understand that.
We were speaking, and I know I have a background with friends who are in the Navy, going back all the way to Korea. Not me personally, but they served in Korea. And I mentioned to Roger that he needed certain things, and he said, no, we don't need that. And not 10 minutes later, someone from the Navy came and told him that he needed exactly what I told him he needed.
Okay.
So I kind of got roped in. And starting in 2009, Roger and I decided we were going to co-chair.
Okay.
We each have our own different personalities. We have our own strengths. He's great when it comes to dealing with the locals. I do more the out of town. I'm also the liaison to the Navy. I was chosen by the Navy from the public affairs officer so that they only had one person to deal with instead of 10 people asking them the same question over and over again.
Sounds amazing. And Roger, my final question is if we could recap the parking situation, because coming into town in Rockport on any weekend in the summertime is easy, but parking isn't so much. So what do you recommend?
Well, obviously there's the shuttle lot up in 127 on the way into town. That's good for people. And obviously, if they can get into Rockport early on a weekend, there's some side streets, and that's the best way. It's going to be a typical weekend, you know, depending on what the weather does and everything. But there's a lot of options if they just, you know, act accordingly.
Okay. And we should remind everybody that the parking meters are enforced all weekend long. Guys, anything else you want to mention?
I think we're good.
Pancake breakfast.
I did mention the pancake breakfast.
Okay. All right. That'll do it. So from the deck of the Sandy Bay Yacht Club in Rockport, we have the co-chairs of the Rockport Navy Committee, Sharon Grand Mason or Grand Mason. Is that right? Was that close?
Grand Mason.
Grand Mason. She goes Grand. All right. And Roger Les. This is Roger Lesh. This is MSONewsports.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
What a hand loafer, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Victoria Chiarsis. She's the program coordinator for PARI, which is, let me see if I can get this right, Police Assisted Addictive Recovery Initiative, or did I get those two mixed
very
up?
Close. Police Assisted Addiction and Recovery Initiative.
All right, there we go. Well, Victoria, I wasn't expecting someone as fresh-faced as you are. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got here.
Okay, so I originally am from New York, grew up in New York.
Where?
In Rye, New York, Westchester County, right where Rye Playland is, amusement park. And I came to Boston 4 years ago for college. I started at BU, and then I transferred to Emerson, and that's where I graduated from in May.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I found PARI and this job is a really good friend of mine, an old coworker of mine, is an old coworker of Allie Hunter McDade, who is the executive director here.
Now, when you say old, you mean someone who's like maybe in their 30s?
No, she's younger. Okay, she's younger than me.
Oh, okay.
We've just been friends for a little while,
mm-hmm.
Which to me is like 3 years. but so Allie told my friend about the job mm-hmm. because they had worked together.
What was your major?
My major was writing, literature, and publishing.
Okay, so that brings us, how do you get from there to here?
So, okay. Let's see, how much detail do I go into?
No, just the connection. And how did you get the job? How did you find out about it, apply for it, and so on, and then get it?
Right, okay. So Allie told my friend Olivia about the job.
Mm.
And Olivia said, I'm not interested, but she thought of me because
okay.
I personally have been in recovery for all of 3 years tomorrow, actually.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I lost someone really close to me from an opioid overdose
mm-hmm.
Last April.
Okay.
So, I was working with Olivia for this whole time. So she knew all of my history and what I was up to and the things I was interested in, and she saw me, like, crying at work, and so she thought of me, and I'm, you know, just graduated from college looking for a job, didn't think that I would go into recovery necessarily in terms of working,
mm-hmm.
but I have become much more passionate about saving lives, especially, you know, losing someone really close to you. I shouldn't say you, but I was really naive about it. Like, I thought that death was not really an option. And once it happens, you're like, oh, this is a serious
reality,
thing.
Yeah.
And this happens to people that I love,
mm-hmm.
Not just like numbers on a data sheet. And you know, I think even in my own personal struggles with this sort of thing, like, I never even got the connection of, like, I could die. So it really also makes me super grateful and appreciative of, like, where I am now. And like, want to help people get the same opportunity that I had.
Okay. Well, yes, it does. It really makes sense, and it's an amazing story. And I'm going to ask you some things later that I don't want to put on the air right now. But obviously, as we sit in PARI headquarters here, I remember a few years ago when former Gloucester Police Chief Leonard Campanello put this program together, and the thing that resonates in my mind still is that he kept saying, "We want to change the conversation about addiction and about opiate addiction in particular," and he did. And in my own case, I never knew that my mother was addicted to painkillers until she got off them after she had a stroke. I never knew that, mm-hmm. that she'd been shopping for painkillers all these years. And I know I had surgery one time a long time ago. They gave me these painkillers. Turned out to be oxy mm-hmm. something or other. Yeah, I remember we had a buyback program, not a buyback, but a turn-in program at the mm-hmm. Rose Baker Center. You clean out your medicine cabinet. I cleaned out the OxyContin, and I was curious as to how many I had taken. I had been prescribed 30.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor said to me, don't be a hero, take these when you need them. So I was curious as to how many I had taken. I poured them out on the table and counted them. There were 29
wow.
in the bottle. And it made me realize, knowing what PARI does and the conversation, how it changed, that the doctor should have said to me, take these only if you need them.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably should have prescribed a hell of a lot fewer than 30. So I'm familiar. I'm learning the conversation, and this program. Maybe you could give a recap as to how you see this program and what it's done, because I know in Gloucester the numbers are amazing on people who have availed themselves of it. But what exactly happens here?
So, what exactly happens here?
Or across the street?
Across the street, right? And here too. I mean, I think Tito is really a good resource for people if they don't want to go to the police department, to come just to Tito, and he can handle some stuff.
And who's Tito? Tell us who Tito.
Sorry, Tito is our outreach worker, advocate.
I got you in the first day at work, so I know this is all new. I got you.
Let's see here. Oh, thank you.
There you go.
He is the Gloucester Police co-responder and care advocate. Okay. So he helps the police department get people.
Would that
into
also
treatment.
Be known as an angel? Because originally this was called the Angel Program.
No, it wouldn't be an angel.
I'm going to call him an angel anyway.
Okay. Tito is an angel.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So basically, people who want treatment can go to, you know, say we're in Gloucester, someone in Gloucester wants treatment, but doesn't know how to reach a treatment center or access the care, can come to the Gloucester Police Department or come to Tito. And we have resources and partnerships with treatment centers all over the country who we can contact and then put someone in a bed in a number of hours rather than days. Because usually it takes a couple of days for someone to get in contact to see if there's a bed, when is it available, you know, all of that. And then by the time they find out, oh, there's a bed available on Monday and it's Friday, it's like, well, I don't really want to do it anymore. So
Right. Now, the police are very cooperative in this. Are they not, in that they are to use their discretion in whether or not to allow someone to get into PARI, or how does that work?
They're pretty cooperative. I mean, they want to save lives as well. Like, they don't want to be going on overdose calls and finding, like, bodies, especially in, like, you know, their own community. So I'm pretty sure that no matter what, like, the point of it is that, like, you can walk into the police department and not be afraid of getting arrested. Like, we're here to help you.
Okay, and finally, you said that your main focus is Essex County. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Right. So we received a grant from the Evelyn and Lily Lutz Foundation a couple months ago, I think. And the grant is for us to hire me and then two advocate and, like, care, sort of what Tito does, care advocates. And we basically are trying to expand our services, our network, into more of Essex County. So we have a couple towns right now, but we want more, this is like the plug, I guess, but we want more law enforcement agencies to partner with us and be, you know, willing to, I don't know, carry the Narcan that we can supply them, be willing to aid people that come into their department, their law enforcement's departments, whatever, their places, and are seeking help. And then also we want to, so the Beverly Hospital has treatment available for people. It's just we want to make it more accessible and not as, like, you know, you go here and then you got to go there and then you got to write this out and do that and all that. Just make it a little bit easier for people to access.
It sounds like you have a lot of work to do.
It does sound like I have a lot of work to do. I don't even know how I'm going to do it, but we'll figure it out.
All right, we'll stop back again. Okay, that is Victoria Kiarsis, who is the program coordinator for PARI. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get. From our boats to your plate.
If you're thinking of renovating your home, please talk to the experienced sales staff at Moynihan Lumber. That's 82 River Street in downtown Beverly. Or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Back on Connections now with Heather Atwood, the managing editor of The Other Cape, as well as the owner of Food for Thought and general great all-around storyteller. Hello.
Oh, gosh. Thank you, Rick.
Well, I love the stories, and you always have something exciting to talk about. Where do we start today?
Well, I'm just going to skim over some politics because I had two political appointments this morning, this week. Mm-hmm. Not appointments, but things to attend. I went to the Seth Moulton Women's Breakfast on Monday morning at 8 o'clock. That was a packed.
How come I didn't get invited to that?
I don't know. I can't imagine.
Damn.
Yeah, my husband wasn't invited either. I don't know. I don't know what that was about.
Okay.
But Seth was there.
So where was that?
He was the only man there.
Mm-hmm.
That was at the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem, and it was a packed room, I will say. And Samantha Powers, the American... our UN person, she spoke, and she spoke really beautifully about the importance of this country's stature with the rest of the world, and that we really need to maintain that in order to not just keep sort of a sense of balance, but to be able to make deals. You know, we need to deal with these countries, and we lose our credibility when we back out of the Paris Agreement, things like that.
At a women's breakfast, what does Congressman Moulton, what's his message to the attendees?
His message, one of the big messages was, who will lose the most with the health, this American Health Care Act? And it will be women, women all around the country. They're the first ones to get hit hard. You know, they're the ones, in most cases, home raising children, often with a couple of jobs trying to raise children. They're the ones who are the most vulnerable. And so that was one of the big messages, that women... And actually, he had a really beautiful point. He talked about being in combat in Iraq, being on the ground in Iraq. And actually, he was doing one of those missions where they're trying to collect information, and they went into this village, and his peer, his comrade, was a woman. And he said, I walked into this hut with this, with my comrade, mm-hmm. a woman, and suddenly I realized, whoa, we have... access to 50% more information because she's here.
Okay.
Because the women in this room will talk to her. Okay. So it was you know, he had some really lovely points. And
well, Congressman Moulton is very active in the region. He was in Ipswich the other day. Bill Newell has some the interview up on that, and he's very active, I guess, in the Democratic Party, and very vocal as well. So we'll have to keep our eye out, I suppose.
Yes, he is. He is not. He's appropriately vocal, I think. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of criticism to. There's room for criticism there, lots.
Well, you know, being a veteran, it's funny when President Obama was elected, when President George W. Bush was elected, I had a little bit of a problem because I don't want to say they were both draft dodgers, but even though Bush served in the National Guard, it wasn't with distinction. He did serve honorably. He did what he was supposed to do, and that's fine. But one of my pet peeves is I think that, speaking politically, you should have some military duty in your background to run for that office, or at least some kind of service, some kind of social service or public service in your background, whether it's as an elected official. But, you know, to my thing, it would be the military, because that's the closest thing we have as a national service like Israel has. And that's just a little off-the-cuff thing of mine. I wish that were in the qualifications to run for president. You have to have some military experience.
Well, actually, there was a very interesting woman at this breakfast named Emily Cherniak. Do you know who she is? Mm-hmm. She started something called New Politics, and their mission is to go into the service, you know, all branches of the service, mm-hmm. and look for people to run for office.
Okay.
Because she feels exactly that way, that, you know, these are the people who can, they have leadership experience, they understand leadership, they really know how to, they can lead the country.
But in addition to leadership, because a lot of people want power and think and equate that with leadership, but to me, public service is so important. If you've had experience in public service, it gives you a little bit, I think, of an understanding of what it takes to be, you know, an elected official who really does serve the people. Anyway, let me get off that soapbox. Okay. What else?
All right. So it's whiting season. Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
And I know what whiting is.
Yeah, isn't that great? I'm surprised you do, because
yes, I do.
I bet a lot of listeners do not know what whiting is.
Okay.
But I think it's been a year since we talked about whiting. It was summer, and I talked about how those fishing boats in Gloucester Harbor are going out and they're coming back with whiting. Whiting is the Gloucester fish in the summertime. Traditionally, The fishermen's families complained that that's all they ate basically from July through September was whiting. But it's a delicious fish. It's very light. It's white. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of really beautiful ways to prepare it because it is so light and white. And
let me interrupt you. When you say white, I know what that means, but can you explain that to someone who's listening, I don't know, maybe in Texas or Kansas?
Sure. The flesh is white. Like very white and light. This is not an oily fish. It's not a smelly fish, you know. And it fries beautifully. The whole thing fries really nicely. It's usually about 10 inches long and fits in a frying pan as a whole fish. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's some bones, but it's not difficult to deal with that. And the flavor is just really beautiful. Okay.
How do we get it?
Well, there you go. You know, the traditional Gloucester conundrum is we drive down Rogers Street, we see those fishing boats, we know they're going out to catch fish. I'm telling you right now they're catching whiting, and we can't buy whiting in this city.
So this is
the complications of the fishing industry, you know. So those boats come in at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the truck is waiting to take it all to New York. And apparently there's a very large demand for whiting in New York and Philadelphia. There are a lot of Jewish people who really love whiting. They smoke whiting. So a lot of it goes there. And somehow people in this city have forgotten to eat whiting.
Oh, okay.
Now, I talked to Angela Sanfilippo this morning, president of the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives, and I said, Angela, what shall I tell people? And she said, tell people to go to their fish markets and ask for local whiting. Mm-hmm. And she also thinks that Ocean Crest, which is a wholesaler, might be able to get people some whiting. So that's your best bet right now.
Okay, and we're very familiar with Ocean Crest. They do an amazing job, and that's one of the real gems of industry in Gloucester, by the way. They're on the cutting edge of science.
Now, that's your story. Tell me how they're on the cutting edge of science.
Because of the way they make fertilizer.
Neptune's Harvest. Neptune's Harvest. It's great. Yeah.
And they have, there's another plant, I forget where it is. I'm not even sure it's in Gloucester because of whatever. But they are experimenting with other things.
Ann
Malloy was telling me about that some time ago, and they are doing some experimenting with recycling stuff that ordinarily wouldn't be recycled, you know, and turning it into good things. So, support Ocean Crest, most definitely. Okay, so where are we now?
Okay, so now I'm going to move down my list. I thought I would mention a benefit that's happening on August 5th. It is for the Phyllis A, which is the oldest fishing boat in our harbor, and they're trying to reconstruct it. It was built in Kennebunkport as it's the first gillnetter that landed in Gloucester, and there's this whole 501c3 that's trying to restore it, and actually they have restored it, but they're kind of keeping it going. And it's a beautiful fishing boat. I have actually seen it, and you can go down there. It's at the Gloucester Marine Railways, and you can see it. And they have a lobster cookout on August 5th from 11:30 to 2:00 at the Gloucester Marine Railways, and that would just be a really fun thing to go to. So
absolutely.
I encourage people to do that. So the other, I will mention my blog. I actually have posted something. I haven't posted anything in a long time, but I gave a friend a birthday party this weekend, and I came up with, or I discovered, a really wonderful recipe for peaches, okay? And
a recipe for peaches,
make peaches, right?
No,
exactly. And that's kind of my point, is that when peaches come into season, or even when cherries come into season, I happen to love figs, I don't want to cook with them. I just want to eat them.
Of course.
You know, we just don't get these things very much. And when they're perfectly ripe, I do not want to do anything to them. I'm not going to make a pie. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make a crumble. I don't want to do that. I want to eat these things. So this is... And I really wish I just wasn't looking you in the eye because I know you're going to laugh. But other people will look at my blog and say, that looks delicious. You take a piece of bread and you slather it wall to wall, as they say, with some really good butter. You peel a beautiful, perfectly ripe peach, cut it into slices, lay that down on that butter, sprinkle it with sugar, and then spoon about a half a teaspoon of icy cold peach schnapps over the whole thing.
Okay. Well, that's the magic word.
Yeah. Right?
Up to that point, it sounded like a poor man's peach pie, you know? But
Well, it is a poor man's peach pie, but it's better than that. It's right. Simple.
Yeah.
And you taste that really fresh peach. Okay. I have served this for a dessert over the weekend. I served it as an appetizer.
Fabulous.
People loved it as an appetizer.
I want that in our top 25. I love it.
Don't you think?
Yes,
right,
yes,
right.
Yes.
So peach toast. That's on my blog.
Peach toast.
And
that
peach looks so beautiful on the sliced peach with the schnapps over it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my blog recommendation.
I will go to it. Absolutely. Yep.
All right. So now we are at number 21 and number 20 for the top 50 dishes in the world.
Okay.
Now, I think I made a mistake because last week we talked about something that this week is number 21 on that list.
Okay. Well,
do you remember what we talked about last week? A croissant.
Yes.
Yeah, remember we had
right.
a croissant
That's
from
right.
Sandpiper Bakery?
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's in the top 20.
That's number 21.
Okay.
So why didn't I see that? I should have saved our croissant eating experience for this week.
That's okay. We hyped it, and it certainly makes sense. I mean, that's popular wherever you go.
Right, exactly. So the only thing I'm going to say about number 21, the croissant, is that we now have them in Gloucester. They are handmade, hand-baked, hand-prepared at the Sandpiper Bakery, which is... Is that Middle Street? I always get the address wrong.
So, yeah.
It's a brand new bakery. She's doing beautiful things. Everyone should go and taste number 21 of the world's best foods.
Okay. All right. Now we're getting down to a top 20.
Yeah, I know. Now we're at the top 20, mm-hmm. right? So arepas. Do you know?
I remember Speedy Gonzalez used to say that in the old Looney Tunes. Arriba, right?
That's arriba, arriba.
Oh, okay.
This is arepa, which is a Venezuelan corn cake. How do you like that?
Okay.
So I knew that you would just say okay. And what a Venezuelan corn cake is basically cornmeal and water mixed together, fried. They stuff it. But I'm going to tell you a corn story because there's a really good – you may know this story. I don't know. There's a really good story about corn.
Okay.
So corn really, as far as every food historian and anthropologist or can say, came from Mexico. All right, that was the origins of corn. And the Mexican diet is really based on corn originally. You know, thousands of years they've been eating corn. And there's all kinds of documented evidence about this. But the Mayans knew, this is really the Mayans we're talking about, they knew that you had to treat that corn with lye or something with, you had to treat it with calcium hydroxide. They didn't, that wasn't their word, but they knew they had to do something to that corn to soften it. And what they ended up doing in the softening of that corn before they ate it was they made the niacin in it available to them as a nutrient. Now, they probably didn't know they were doing that, but they were doing that.
Figured out, yeah.
And therefore, it was successful as a nutritional staple. Now, Christopher Columbus comes along, and he discovers this culture and their corn. And he says, oh, I have a fabulous new grain to take back to Europe. But he misses that part of the story.
Okay.
He did not bring the calcium hydroxide back with him to Europe. So he introduces corn to Europe. All these cultures begin, they love it. They begin making polenta and all those, and you know, all these corn products, and they get pellagra. It becomes their staple, but they don't know to treat it. So they have a niacin deficiency, which results in pellagra.
No kidding.
And it becomes even more interesting because the symptoms of pellagra are flaky skin and hair loss and, you know, weakness. But one of the really specific symptoms is you are very, very sensitive to the sun. So it actually hurts to be out in the sun.
Wow.
And they believe that that was actually the origins of the vampire myth.
Yeah.
Why certain people could not, it was too painful for them to be out in the sun.
Man, you just covered about 9,000 different things in one story. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah, really.
No,
oh, wow.
Corn
okay.
really has a rich history.
I forget how we got there. What was number 20 again?
Arepas. It's a corn cake from Venezuela.
Okay. All right. Whew, man, that covered a lot in a short amount of time. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and it also points to the fact I was talking to a class that I have and talking about how, in quotes, ancient, unquote, religions, or not religions, but civilizations knew so much about the people-to-earth relationship in terms of medicine and health. Now, obviously, they didn't live as long and know as much as we do now, but they know stuff that they knew was good for you and... Western civilization sort of pushed into the background and is being rediscovered.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, I think it's just amazing that those Mayans knew that they had to treat this corn that way.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so let's see. You should mention your website and the blog.
Okay, my website is The Other Cape, theothercape.com. It's a beautiful new online magazine about Cape Ann. And my blog is Food for Thought. That's where the peach toast is. So everyone should go look at those beautiful sliced peaches.
I'm loving it, and I'm going to ask my wife to make it. There we go. Or maybe I'll try it. Who knows?
It's really easy to make.
I don't know about that. We'll get really adventurous. All right, that's Heather Atwood with the story behind the story. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSO News Sports.
MSONewsSports.com is your new connection to North Shore News and Sports. We provide video, radio interviews, photos, and much, much more. Our daily North Shore Today post features a local radio newscast, as well as related news stories, photos, and sometimes interesting videos. There are also several ways to listen to our radio programming on the website. On the top left of our webpage is a tab called 24/7 Radio. Here, you will find our latest newscasts and interviews. Our MSO Radio Live Channel A tab is a fast way for you to click on and listen to our live programming, talk shows, and live sporting events. We also invite you to follow us on Twitter at MSO News Sports or check out our Facebook page. Very importantly, we want to hear from you. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. That's msonewsports@gmail.com. Or call our voice messaging system at any time, 978-325-3638. That's 978-325-3638. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined by Julia Green, who is the recycling coordinator, City of Lynn. And Julia, you have learned a lot about recycling, I think, in the last few years here, right?
Yes, I have, especially here in Lynn. So what I was saying earlier is that, you know, Lynn before had a recycling rate that hovered between 6 and 8%. And then we went to this automated trash system with the big toters that you see all over the city, one trash, one recycling. Once that we changed over to that system, we went from a 6 to 8% recycling rate all the way up to a 21% recycling rate. So we made some great strides in the past few years.
For our listeners, I'm just going to fill them in because they could be listening from all around anywhere on the North Shore. But Lynn has the big buckets, the big barrels, where the truck comes by and the forks go out and they lift them up and tip them into the truck. And so you have the trash every week and the recycling every 2 weeks with different barrels. But tell us about this monitoring process and education process that's going on in the city.
Okay, yeah. So the City of Lynn got this grant from the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, and it's called the Recycling IQ Kit. And what we're trying to do is increase the recycling IQ of the people in Lynn so that we have what's called less contamination in our recycling carts. So that means anything that does not belong in the cart. So things that don't belong in the cart are like plastic bags, food and liquids, and even anything like a propane tank, clothing, anything that doesn't fall into like products that you would bring home from the supermarket that are clearly labeled as recyclables. So what we're trying to do is do a broad-based education in Lynn. So we have a lot of media out there, but then we're actually inspecting over 5,000 households' recycling carts and giving them feedback at the curb. So if, for instance, we find too many contaminants inside of a recycling cart, then we tag that cart and we reject it. And then we check off on the tag what needs to be fixed. And then those households then can re-put their recycling cart out next time with the correct stuff and pull out what was wrong in it. So that's basically the program. So we have been operating now for about 2 weeks. And the first weeks we might have, out of 500 households, rejected anywhere between, like, say, 70 and 100 carts. But now that we're into our second week, we're down to anywhere between 30 and 50 carts. So we're seeing already great results in this feedback program.
So most likely it's kind of like food products mixed in with the recycling. Does that sound right?
Yeah, well, the biggest problem, and we've got billboards up all over Lynn, we've got like banners as well on a lot of school fences, and in other parts of the neighborhood, basically no bags. So plastic bags are like the biggest contaminant, and not just in Lynn, all over the country, because for some reason the sophisticated engineers in the recycling world cannot figure out how to prevent plastic bags from gumming up the works inside of a recycling plant when they go in for processing. So what happens with these plastic bags is they actually get caught in the machinery, and they have to shut down the plants several times a day sometimes and actually cut those plastic bags out of the machinery. And so since they haven't figured that out, we're doing campaigns all over the state and all over the country about no plastic bags in the recycling. And so plastic bags can be recycled, and that's the confusion for people, but not in these curbside systems. What you can do is take them back to a supermarket. Every supermarket in the area has a box at the front of the store that you can deposit all plastic bags in plastic wrap. So that's the other thing, plastic wrap. Like, for instance, if you get bottled water, you get you see that wrapping all around it. That needs to not go into the recycle cart, too. So all plastic film and bags. So that's our number one education piece. But then there's also other problems. People think it's fine to put food in there. It's not. If you have bottles of anything, empty it out. We want to, dry and empty. And then, clothing. Clothing, donate it. Don't put it in your recycle cart. And then things like Christmas lights or hoses, things like that. Because if you can imagine what kind of damage those do in the machinery if we have plastic bags gumming up the works. So we call those tanglers, and those are another thing that we don't want in. So there's a bunch of stuff. What you basically should always do is look at the top of the cart has a picture of everything that's recyclable. Basically, it's bottles, it's cans, it's cardboard, it's paper, it's boxes like cereal boxes. Those are the things that you can recycle, glass jars. So all of that stuff is recyclable, and it's actually most of what we throw away. What's not recyclable is a used napkin or a used paper towel or any of those other things that I just mentioned, So it's really important because we're trying to both help the environment and save money. So when you throw the right stuff in the recycling cart, all of that gets processed correctly. It goes on to the producers who produce new plastic goods or produce new glass goods or produce like a can. A can can actually be made into another can in our system within 28 days. So when you see a soda can on the store shelf, 28 days ago that came in to a canning company and got remade into another can. So some of this is really quick in terms of recreating new products. So,
well, let me ask you a couple of other things here. There's a composting initiative as well in Lynn. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, so, in some ways I don't think I should be called the recycling coordinator. I think I should be called the less trash coordinator. So that's what we're really trying to do, is the less trash we send to the incinerator, and that's what we do in Lynn, or to a landfill, the better. So we want to have less trash. So we like the words reduce, reuse, recycle, right? So one of the things is to reduce is like, well, what else can we get out of that trash cart? We can get food out of that trash cart. And food can be made into compost. So if you have, if you garden, if you have the space in your yard for a composter, we have a grant from the Department of Environmental Protection right now where we're selling the highest quality composter, which is an earth machine. They sell them at the big box stores for $100 a piece. We're selling them for $25 a piece. And you can begin to compost, because probably 15 to 25% of your trash is food waste, you know. And so you could be composting that, make a high-quality compost, and use it in your yard. And when you improve your soil, you also improve the carbon footprint of that soil, because what the scientists have found now is that a rich soil actually, you know, holds carbon and holds carbon better. So the more everybody's gardening and using compost, the better it is for the earth.
Anything else that you want to share with us about the recycling effort in Lynn?
No, just that. Well, I just want to say that, you know, people are really trying in Lynn. We've seen the recycling rate go up considerably, and people keep working at it, keep thinking less trash, how to have less trash and recycle more, and then reduce, reuse, and we'll do better all the time. It'll save us money, and we'll be saving the earth.
Oh, I want to ask you one more thing, because okay. Before we started talking, you talked about collecting food waste. Now, in the composting thing, that's food waste. But yet, I also understand that there are some communities and countries that are doing this differently. So tell us that story about how even California might be handling food waste differently than the way we do here in Massachusetts.
Well, there's new technologies, and it's called a digester. And so actually out in Deer Island, where the wastewater treatment plant is, they have digesters out there. So those are those big egg-shaped like tanks that they have. And they have those. There's one in Rutland on a dairy farm. And actually the city of Lawrence, like their water district, has now a digester. So what's happening in Massachusetts is we're starting to implement a food waste ban. So like, you know, like I know Whole Foods in Swampscott has a tank outside of their store that you can see that tank. It's a new tank. And that they put all their food waste into kind of like a garbage disposal. It goes into that tank as slurry, and they take that slurry to a digester. And what that digester does is heats it up, captures all the methane, and makes a high quality fertilizer. And so then it's really a beautiful system, and hopefully within 10 years we'll all be having similar systems everywhere. We're not quite there yet, so doing the composting is a great way to start to get that food waste out of either the landfill or the incinerator, you know, less trash.
All right, Julia, great talking with you, and best of luck, and we'll be in touch soon.
Okay, thank you.
Julia Green, the recycling coordinator, or the less trash or less trash, whatever, coordinator for the city of Lynn. I'm Bill Newell on MSO News Sports.